Next case is Diamond Coating Technologies versus Hyundai Motor America. Counsel prepared to go forward?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, Mr. Grinstein?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, Mr. Grinstein, there's very little in the briefs that isn't highlighted as yellow.
Yes, Your Honor.
Does all of this have to be confidential? Because if it is, I have a couple of questions.
Well, yes, Your Honor. We are in the business of licensing. The confidential material that's been designated as confidential all relates to the license agreement or the assignment agreement between DCT and Sanyo, which was marked confidential, and so we're not in the complete authority.
It was marked confidential?
In the course of the agreement. The agreement expressly states that the agreement is confidential.
So we
don't have the power to waive that unilaterally, Your Honor.
Okay, so let me ask you a couple of questions. One, what's the impact of a published opinion which reveals the relevant sections of that agreement?
Your Honor, I wouldn't suggest that Your Honors should publish an opinion that holds back in
the
any
court
way
below
whatsoever.
Published an opinion, counsel.
Excuse me?
The court below published an opinion?
That's right, Your Honor. It didn't
the
go.
The clock's not on. It should be.
The court below did publish an opinion, Your Honor. I don't believe that the court's opinion below went extensively.
Oh, no, I take that back. It shouldn't be. Go ahead. Resend it. Go ahead.
The court below did publish an opinion. I don't think it got extensively into the exact contractual terms that we're discussing. So
It quoted them directly by number. Okay. So number two, you're bound by that agreement with Sanyo?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So they control that?
We don't have the unilateral right to waive the confidentiality provision. That's certainly true, Your Honor.
Do you think that that might suggest that Sanyo has control over, some substantial control over your ability to stand here and answer important questions whose answers are necessary to establish your right to sue, and maybe that's a substantial right?
This court has never held that the right to control the confidentiality of an agreement is a substantial right that speaks to issues like...
You have to establish, particularly as an appellant, that you have a right to sue.
Correct, Your Honor.
We have kind of a hard time, and this completely turns on the details of this agreement, and we can't talk about them. And Sanyo has the ability to stop you from talking about it.
Well,
how does that not...
My understanding, Your Honor, is that given the context of the court proceeding that we're in right now, we are freely able to talk about the provisions of the contract because it's
okay,
necessary
stop,
to your determination.
Stop for a minute. Run that clock.
Well, so are we free to?
Yeah.
All right. So just to be sure, I don't want to step on any toes here. Your understanding is that we are free to discuss everything in the briefs that is marked as confidential.
That's my understanding of how the court's rules work, Your Honor. I don't believe I can stop this court from asking me questions about the specific provisions, and I'm here ready, willing, and able to discuss the specific provisions of the contract. I believe that's necessary to this court's opinion.
I mean, this is a recorded oral argument.
Yes, Your Honor. I understand that.
And there will be possibly a published opinion.
Correct, Your Honor.
And you haven't asked for the courtroom to be cleared.
I have not, Your Honor.
All right. So we can take it you waived the confidentiality.
Your Honor, I think we've done what we need to do to protect the confidentiality as with respect to our contractual partner, Sanyo. And I believe at this point, Sanyo couldn't complain about the steps we've taken to protect the confidentiality. But Your Honors need to be able to ask me questions about these provisions in the agreement. And so at this point, per court order, per the court's rulings and necessities, we've got to discuss these issues. But as it relates to this contract, I think an important initial matter we should consider, Your Honors, is how this case differs from the vast majority of this court's previous standing cases. In the vast majority of this court's previous standing cases, we have a situation in which a holder of title of the patents exclusively licenses some set of rights to a licensee, and then this court is faced with the question from a prudential standing standpoint of whether or not the licensee...
Let me ask you a cleanup question for me.
Yes, Your Honor.
In your blue brief on 34 and 37, you say various provisions were all simply intended to ensure, and then again on 37, simply intended to protect. But you don't have any evidence to support that intent.
That's correct.
What's the evidence in the record that shows...
There is no evidence with respect to intent in the record. This was not a parole evidence type case. I'm getting that intent, and we're getting that intent from the generalized structure of the agreement. The purpose of those provisions are provisions...
So that's simply argument, and it doesn't have any support.
I believe it's supported by the structure of the agreement, Your Honor.
Right.
But no, we're not relying upon this person or that person's affidavit or declaration that says this agreement was intended to be X, Y, or Z. To the contrary, under New York law, you don't look to parole evidence in order to discern the purpose of an agreement or anything like that unless there's alleged to be an ambiguity. There's no such allegation right here.
Can I ask about one of the several provisions that I have been focusing on?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's, I think it's 6.1. The first sentence says something about a right to practice that Sanyo is given, right?
It's 5.1.1, I believe, Your Honor.
No, I think 6.1 is it. I'm sorry, you're right. 5.1.4 is it, I think?
5.1.1 is the DCT activities clause. 5.4 is a clause dealing with certain conflicts of interest.
I'm sorry. I'm terribly sorry about the numbers. 2.4A.
2.4.
Sorry, it's not even in the 5.6 range. We'll probably get to 6.1 and 5.1.4, but let's... So 2.4A has two sentences, and the first says... Sanyo can make stuff and sell it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Can also lease it.
Also
lease it.
Yes, Your Honor.
So I'm going to ask you a question about what the lessee's protection, if any, against infringement is if it buys something, if it leases something from Sanyo. And then I'm interested as well in the second sentence that discusses foundry rights, yes, where I assume that that adds something to what the first sentence says that doesn't invoke exhaustion, which is only based on a sale and therefore wouldn't cover the lease situation anyway. And Sanyo can provide manufacturing services and then give the manufactured item to somebody else. Is the somebody else, the foundry service customer, protected against infringement?
To answer the first issue first as to lessees, I assume a lessee would be protected per the terms of this per patent exhaustion principles. But of course, we're talking about that lessee has to be obtaining a Sanyo produced product. So it's really not any different than selling a Sanyo produced product to that person, leasing it or selling it. They're still going to acquire some certain rights pursuant to the doctrine of patent exhaustion. As to the issue of foundry rights.
So you think that Sanyo, by virtue of this agreement, can choose to effectively license its foundry customers and its lessees to engage in otherwise infringing activity, a form of licensing. Why is that not substantial?
Let me separate out those two. As far as the lessee rights, that's really no different than what a non-exclusive licensee normally gets the right to do. So under that theory, every non-exclusive licensee who has the right to make, use, or sell a product gets a right in some sense to sublicense to its customers by handing them the product that they are licensed to make. So I don't think that's substantial.
But that's why I did focus on the word lease as opposed to sell. Exhaustion would give a practitioner's sale customers, its purchasers, that right. But this gives Sanyo the right to allow me, if it leases me something or if it makes something for me, that the background law, including the law of exhaustion, does not give. And so Sanyo has the ability to say, diamond coating, you don't get to control whether I can use and then sell this product. It can make it for me.
Again, let me distinguish between the lessee rights and the foundry rights. As far as the lessee rights are concerned, it still has to be a Sanyo product. I mean, Hyundai and Kia couldn't come to Sanyo and say, please lease us our own auto parts. It's got to be a Sanyo product. And so I don't really see it as expanding much beyond the non-exclusive
right,
license grant.
But Sanyo can effectively license me not to make, but to use and sell. Isn't that a significant licensing right as their lessee? Or as their foundry customer?
Well, the foundry rights, let's talk about the foundry rights, because the foundry rights are completely different. The foundry rights in Section 2.4 make it very clear that, for example, Hyundai and Kia could not go to Sanyo and say, we've been sued, let's start buying product from you, Sanyo, because that way we can get foundry rights and be exempt from suit. Because Section 2.4 states that Sanyo may not provide those foundry rights to anyone who's under notice of infringement. So this court frequently...
But that takes care of some group, the ones who have had notice, but as to others, Sanyo can license them to use and sell.
I would submit, Your Honor, that's not a substantial right, because in that situation, Sanyo can only provide those rights to its customers who are normal customers, which is not any different than a non-exclusive right. I mean, it's not like Sanyo can go out there and freely start sub-licensing these patents, especially considering the fact that 2.4a expressly excludes sub-licensing from Sanyo's rights.
I'm sorry, where's the business about normal customers?
Well, it doesn't use the phraseology normal customers, but it talks about covered products, which are covered Sanyo products. So Sanyo can't go out there and start... my point being, Your Honor, that in order for someone to enjoy the 2.4a license rights that are provided here to Sanyo, they've got to be a customer of Sanyo. It's got to be a Sanyo product, which is not any different, Your Honor, than any other non-exclusive licensee who also gets the right to make, use, and sell products and thereby exempt its customers from infringement suits.
Go ahead.
No, Your Honor.
What is your understanding of the full scope of the concept of the foundry rights?
My understanding of the concept of foundry rights is like contract manufacturing. So someone comes to you and says, I would like you to make this product for me. The foundry performs and creates the product for that person. And in that sense, the product is then exempt from an infringement suit to the extent that the foundry has exclusive or non-exclusive.
These would be products that are made by Sanyo, not products that Sanyo contracts for someone else to make for Sanyo.
That's correct. Sanyo is acting as the foundry. So if anyone wants to take advantage of these rights, they have to go and start using Sanyo as a foundry, which, by the way, I would note that there's no record evidence whatsoever that Sanyo actually has been acting as a foundry for anyone. So putting that aside, the license grant and the rights that are granted in 2.4a are very limited and don't give Sanyo any right to indulge infringement. Because once infringement comes up, once it's identified that there is an infringer, Sanyo can't provide those foundry rights. And I see that my time has expired.
Any other questions? Okay, counsel. Mr. Hill?
Yes, good morning, Your Honor. I'm Reggie Hill with Jenner and Block here on behalf of Nissan. I'm going to argue for the defendant appellees. My colleague Chad Ray is here. Also, I want to introduce counsel for Hyundai Kia entities, James Pack and Dan Talish. May it please the court. Your Honor, under this court's standing precedent and consistent with the policy behind the prudential standing doctrine, Diamond Coating Technologies, DCT, lacks all substantial rights, and Sanyo should have been joined in order for there to be prudential standing. Without Sanyo, this case was properly dismissed by the district court. The situation we have here, Your Honor, is that DCT is a mere agent of Sanyo to enforce the patents and shield Sanyo from the obligations and burdens of U.S. patent litigation while providing all the benefits, including Sanyo maintaining substantial financial and ownership interests in the patents. As a practical matter, this arrangement thwarted the defendants and appellees in this case from getting routine and important discovery. For example, the defendants were not able to get conception and reduction to practice documents or testimony for the inventors, even though that had been promised.
Let me ask you this. Suppose that this was a much less complicated agreement and it only had one principal provision, two provisions. One is that there's a transfer of title to the patent to DCT, and two is that half of any proceeds from either the sale or the exploitation via licensing or infringement action from the patent would be split 50-50 between Sanyo and DCT. Would you say under those circumstances that there was a substantial right on not all substantial rights had been conveyed to DCT?
I don't think that I would say that in that particular case as you laid it out, Your Honor.
In other words, the fact that the payments for the transfer of title are in the form, in effect, of a share of the proceeds is not enough to defeat the transfer of substantial rights.
I believe that's consistent with this court's precedent, that in itself alone would not be enough.
Okay. And what do you think, setting aside the sharing of proceeds, what do you think it is that, in your view, principally, most importantly, trips the wire for kicking this over into a non-substantial rights transfer?
Right. So I would sum it down to a couple of things, Your Honor. I mean, first off, and the court has looked at this, for example, in the ProPat case, the inability to be able to assign its rights under the agreement and the patents themselves. In other words, to the extent DCT has something, they have something that they can't sell or transfer to someone else without Sanyo giving its consent, which is unfettered.
Well, we know they can't transfer the agreement, but why can't they transfer the assets?
I think in this particular case, Your Honor, whatever was given over to Sanyo, if you look at the grant clause, was given subject to the agreement. I believe, and I'm not quoting it, but it effectively...
That's true, but I mean, why does the agreement prohibit DCT from selling the assets?
I believe the entire arrangement prohibits them from selling the agreements, both by the limitations on what DCT's business is. DCT's business is, in fact, limited. If you look at the agreement to licensing, enforcing...
They can't practice it, in other words.
They can't practice it and the invention, and they can license and litigate. And then there's a clause that says you can't do anything else. So this is an ongoing operation that can do what it wants to do. It's limited in what it can do. And then I believe that the security interests that were recorded against the patent, and there's no clear way to erase the security interests, anyone taking the patents, so theoretically, if they were to make an assignment without Sanyo's consent, anyone taking the patents would certainly be taking them subject to whatever rights Sanyo has and whatever the agreements has, and they would have the security interests that would prevent sort of further transferring the agreements or at least encumbering the agreements in that matter. And so as I see it, as a practical matter, the only way they could actually transfer the patent assets themselves is if Sanyo consents. That's certainly the only way I would advise any client of mine to purchase these particular assets. So I believe that's one issue. I also believe that the questions that Your Honors touched upon in terms of the ability of Sanyo to actually give some licenses is also important. It's a very substantial right. And I view the foundry rights in addition to the have-made rights that Sanyo has under the license, gives Sanyo, except for the narrow exception pointing out where there's been notice of infringement, that Sanyo can both make products for somebody else, so they could make products for Nissan and Hyundai if they had not been sued on notice of infringement, or they could, in fact, have their suppliers make products for Sanyo that Sanyo could then sell as Sanyo products. So I do believe this is different than the other cases in the court's precedent where there have not been substantial rights in the sense that there are substantial rights for licensing here.
Are the foundry rights limited solely to Sanyo making the materials?
Well, I believe that the foundry rights are limited to Sanyo making, but in fact they have made rights as well. So mm-hmm. Sanyo mm-hmm. can have other products under the patents made for them.
Your opposing counsel said there was no evidence that Sanyo actually had, I think he said that Sanyo had foundry capability. Is that true?
Your Honor, we've had no access to Sanyo and what their ability is. That's part of the problem with this lawsuit. So I don't have any idea what Sanyo, in fact, is able to do.
Fair enough.
Now, with respect to the rights that Sanyo has retained vis-a-vis any licensing, how would Sanyo's position, let's set foundry rights aside for a moment, how is Sanyo's position any different from that of any non-exclusive licensee?
It's a good question, Your Honor. I believe that if you set aside the foundry rights, I mean, and the have-made rights I think are important too, there certainly have been other cases in this court where that type of ability to sub-license, for example, the Luminara case that the court recently had before it, there was some ability for Disney in that case to do some licensing to affiliates and to other people that were associated it. And that sounds a bit more similar to that circumstance than the circumstance we have in this case on that particular issue.
Well, if, for example, I'm the transferor of the title to the patent, but I retain a non-exclusive license, that itself wouldn't be a substantial right retained. It's sufficient to defeat the transfer of title, I gather, and the standing would not be a problem in that for the transferee, correct?
I believe that's right. Consistent.
Okay. So, and I make products, I sell them to people under my non-exclusive license. They clearly can use the products without fear of infringement suits, right?
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. And I'm just wondering what it is in your view that puts Sanyo in a different position from someone in my position.
I believe what's different is the foundry rights, quite frankly, Your Honor, because although those would be products that were made by Sanyo and then sold to downstream customers, but we have the opportunity for Sanyo to make a product, let's say we're in the automotive industry, for General Motors that could then be sold. And so they have an additional right to provide others, not just their own customers, but they could make products for others. So, for example,
those people become their customers? I mean, if they're making the products, yes, it's true that they are contracting with someone to provide them with in some form the products, but that their own selection of folks to whom to sell is all covered by the license, right? A non-exclusive license.
I believe that's right. I want to step back, though, and say, what if it were our supplier, Schaeffler? So say, for example, somebody supplies pistons to the automotive industry. Sanyo is not in that business of supplying those to the automotive industry. I don't know if they are or not. It's a hypothetical. But because of the patents and the rights that they have in terms of a license, including the rights to do foundry, then Sanyo could make that product for the supplier, Schaeffler, and Schaeffler could sell that to the entire automotive industry. So therefore, they have some ability to indulge infringements, if you will, that DCT does not.
Is it the norm in retaining a non-exclusive license that the transferee doesn't have a right to practice the patent in suit?
I think it is abnormal for the transferee, Your Honor, not to be able to practice the patent in suit. And we have this actually.
To me, that distinguishes it as well.
Right. I never finished my list of distinguishing, but in fact, not being able to have the right to practice the invention, there's also some level of control that is being maintained by Sanyo with regard to who gets sued and who doesn't get sued.
Well, it seemed you were relying solely on foundry rights, and I thought there was more.
I apologize, Your Honor. No, we're relying on all the rights set forth in our brief, both individually and cumulatively, with respect to this particular situation, because that's what the court's precedent has looked at. And so I started out with that, but certainly the right to practice or the inability of DCT to actually practice the invention is very important. Also, I think what's very important in this particular case are the broad reversionary rights that there are in the actual assets themselves, so that it seems no matter what happens, these assets end up back with Sanyo. So, for example, if they fail to maintain the patents and prosecute the patents, there are provisions that allow Sanyo to either step in and do the prosecution through them, or it requires them to give the patents back to DCT. if DCT decides it doesn't want to exploit the patents, and I know you've read the briefs, but they need to exploit these patents sort of in the best interest of Sanyo and DCT. And that's a different circumstance than what's in the court's precedent as well.
Who determines the best interest?
That's a very good question, Your Honor. I think if Sanyo writes them a letter and says it's in our best interest that you do X, Y, and Z, I believe they're required to give that some consideration, or those words don't have meaning in the agreement. And those words are important, I think, into the agreement. So what is in the interest of Sanyo? We know that they identified some particular targets at some point, and we know that they also allowed DCT to exclude certain people from being sued. And so all of those things which relate to who gets sued under these patents are being collectively controlled by Sanyo and DCT on some level.
If Sanyo had sold the patents outright to DCT in exchange for a large chunk of DCT stock, then I suppose DCT would be obliged by principles of corporate governance to act in the interest of the shareholders, and that would mean that they would not be able to do things that were adverse to the interest of this large shareholder that has just transferred the patent, right? I mean, I'm wondering whether the act in the interest of Sanyo really goes any farther than a different kind of arrangement would go, which would clearly not be a retention of an interest.
I believe it goes very far. I mean, obviously, corporate officers have some fiduciary obligations. I think those are different. They relate to sort of the corporation itself. Here we have
shareholders.
The shareholders themselves, absolutely. Here we have a situation where DCT sort of has color of title and is a separate operation, and we both have Sanyo limiting their corporate operation. At the same time, they have to act in the best interest of Sanyo and DCT, whatever that is, with relation to commercializing these particular inventions, which really means licensing and litigating these particular patents.
What is it about the term exploiting, I think it's exploitation or exploiting the patents, that leads you to believe that that does not include the possibility of transferring the patents for if that turns out to have been the wisest commercial course for DCT?
Right. So if you turn in the agreement, at least we've made several arguments, Your Honor, on this particular issue. And the first one is the whole character of the agreement, if you read it, is about licensing.
I understand.
And
I understand.
Litigating.
But if push came to shove and they just decided this licensing business is not doing well, but we have somebody that's willing to pay what we regard as a vastly over market value for these patents, what is it that tells you in the agreement that DCT couldn't do that, even though they would conclude that that was very much in their interest and that of Sanyo? Because
right. Because
they would transfer half of that very large proceeds to Sanyo.
Right, Your Honor. You know, as you say, the question, as you ask the question, my answer would deal in practicalities, quite frankly. And I believe that there's language about exploit that we've raised in our brief. But sure, if someone showed up with a ton of cash, which is actually what these parties set out to do in the very beginning before they got to this arrangement to sell those patents, I believe that there might be an arrangement that could be struck. But there's nothing in this agreement that determines what those arrangements would be. And in fact, Sanyo would have to give its consent to that arrangement at that time, and I believe that the parties would work it out at that time.
But if DCT came in and said, we're exploiting the patent, how what better form of exploitation than to get more than you could possibly get by licensing? Would there be an answer in the four corners of the agreement to where you would conclude they could not do that, no matter how advantageous a commercial transaction might be thought to be?
I believe there is evidence that would be argued that they could not do that based upon the agreement.
And what would
I'm sorry, Your Honor, that would basically be in 5.1, there are certain activities for DCT that are limited. So DCT's business shall consist of the prosecution, maintenance, licensing, litigation, enforcement, and exploitation of the assets.
Well, the exploitation, of course, is the key word there.
And exploitation, if you look in 5.1.4, at least, Your Honor, there's one statement there that says in the middle of 5.14, in the event DCT determines it will no longer exploit a family of patents within the assets, DCT shall notify Sanyo and give Sanyo a 90-day option to acquire DCT's rights to the family for the consideration of only $10. It goes on. My point being that exploit, as used in that particular part of the paragraph, could not mean selling the assets, because if they stopped exploiting them, if exploited meaning selling them, then they wouldn't have anything to return back to Sanyo as contemplated in this paragraph. So we don't believe, if you read this entire agreement, that you come away with the idea that there was some ability to sell the patents. And if you compare it with the other agreement, in fact, the other agreement was very explicit about selling the patents.
Time's up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honors, I'd like to just hit a couple of the substantial rights that my colleague mentioned. The first thing my colleague mentioned was that Sanyo controls the ability to assign, and that DCT has no ability to assign, and Sanyo's consent rights are unfettered. My colleague, unfortunately, I'm afraid, is mistaken. Section 9.12 of the agreement states expressly that any time a consent is required in the agreement, that consent cannot be unreasonably withheld. And Judge Bryson, you held in the speed play case that assignment clauses that are conditioned upon the reasonable withholding of consent do not give rise to a substantial right. So even if we want to interpret Section 9.6 as limiting the ability of DCT to assign the patents without the consent of Sanyo, per speed play, that's not a substantial right, because Sanyo has to give, cannot unreasonably withhold its consent.
You misspoke yourself, counsel.
I'm sorry.
The court held.
Yes, Your Honor. The second right that my colleague referenced was the right, alleged absence of any right within DCT to practice the patents. The assignment agreement doesn't say that DCT is not allowed to practice the patents. And in fact, that entire proposition is entirely inconsistent with Section 2.4. In Section 2.4, DCT grants to Sanyo a non-exclusive right to practice the patent. Well, if DCT didn't have a right to practice the patent, how could DCT have granted a license to Sanyo to practice the patent? On top of all of that, I would direct Your Honor's attention to Article 1, the definition of gross proceeds. The definition of gross proceeds within Article 1 says that DCT has got to pay all of these monies over to Sanyo, including any cash it receives from the, quote, use of the patents, close quote. And use is distinguished from litigation, licensing, all those other things. So there is no express prohibition against DCT practicing. DCT has to pay 50% of all of its revenues from the use of the patents. And there's no possible way that DCT could grant a license to practice to Sanyo unless DCT had the right to practice. So, in our opinion, there is no right of practice that resides within DCT. On the issue of exploit, the question was raised as to whether or not the exploitation rights that DCT enjoys include the right to sell the patents. And Sanyo itself has argued, what does exploit mean? Exploit means make productive use of. And our definition I'm willing to embrace. If you look at Schedule B to the patents, Schedule B is the compensation arrangement under this agreement. Schedule B says Sanyo shall be paid for the, quote, productive use, close quote, of the patents based upon 50% of the gross proceeds. And how is gross proceeds defined? It includes cash that is made via the purchase of the patents. Someone else purchasing the patents, paying DCT money. In that case, Sanyo gets 50% of those gross proceeds. So Schedule B makes it clear that exploit is associated with the concept of selling the patents based upon Sanyo's own definition of exploit, which is to make the productive use of. Per Schedule B, making productive use of something includes selling it. Lastly, with respect to the issue of acting in the best interest of Sanyo, again, I would emphasize
the difference between selling and practicing.
selling the patents would be to offload the asset. Practicing the patents would be to use the patents and create some sort of a product with them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
The agreement specifically provides DCT shall engage in no business or activity other than the business, and the business is prosecution, maintenance, licensing, litigation, enforcement, and exploitation, but not actually practicing.
Well, Your Honor, by the definition that Sanyo even uses of exploitation means to make productive use of something. I would submit that practicing a patent is plainly making the productive use of something. You are using the patent to make a product. I mean, exploit has got to mean something, Your Honor, beyond litigation and licensing, because litigation and licensing are separately identified in Section 5.1.1. So we have to struggle with what exploit means. And it logically means both using the patent to practice something and selling it per the other terms of the agreement.
I'll let you wrap up.
So,
actually, could I ask quickly a question? I did not have the page before me when you were talking about Schedule B,
yes, Your Honor,
financial terms. And I thought you had said that there was a reference to purchasing of patents in Schedule B.
Yes, Your Honor. It's a two-step point. Sanyo should be paid based on the productive use of the patents, and Sanyo has defined productive use to mean exploit. Then it says 50% of adjusted gross proceeds. Gross proceeds is a defined term. So if you flip back to Article 1, gross proceeds on page A0201, gross proceeds is defined, and there's quite a bit of language, but if you get down to paragraph B or subsection B, shall include any cash, blah, 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 including relating to the purchase of the assets. So Schedule B refers to gross proceeds. Gross proceeds is money from the purchase of the assets. Thank you, Your Honor.